Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the richest nation in the world when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong, and terribly wrong with the Ten Commandments, because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks of the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Now, are you aware that your daughter, for instance, couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, or the Law of God, or the Common Law, or Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request. Or, better yet, if you want to download it direct, you can go to our archives page and download it directly right off our archives page. That's georgegordon.org. All right, we've been talking about the Ten Commandment model and the Ten Plank to the Communist Manifesto model concerning the richest nation in the world. And I showed you there's 22 indices that we get from the Bible, particularly from Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, as it relates to this thing of wealth. We Americans have been practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto now for about 100 years. We got after it hot and heavy about 1913 when we enacted the Federal Reserve Act. Then in 1933, we really got after it, and we started embracing all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto until today. That's what we practice. And I showed you, you're educating your children in public school. That's the 10th plank. You're doing business with the central bank and all of its member banks. That's the 5th plank. And you're paying a heavy progressive income tax. That's the 2nd plank. And you've divorced yourself from all of your property. You got a social security number and gave all of your labor to the government in reciprocity for 108 benefits that you receive under the Social Security Act. Now, let's take a look at the Ten Commandment model. I know that's a wild new concept, but if we were to analyze the Ten Commandments as they relate to wealth, it might reveal to us some of the indici that we need to practice in order to collect, in order for us to make some money on this transaction, make some money on this deal. Now, the Ten Commandments are located in the Old Testament. They're located in Exodus chapter 20 and Deuteronomy chapter 5. So if you want to write that down for reference, it's Exodus chapter 20, Deuteronomy chapter 5. Now, somebody's going to write me a letter and say, but the Old Testament's been abolished and done away with. Now, you probably heard that from that pulpit parrot that you go to listen to every Sunday morning, but he's been lying to you. Now, the guy that knows a little bit more than the pulpit parrot on Sunday morning is Jesus, the guy that he talks about a lot, but doesn't obey or follow. Jesus made an observation one time in Matthew 4, verse 4. Write that down. Matthew 4, 4. It's easy to remember. He also repeated it in Luke 4, verse 4. So Matthew and Luke carry this statement. Listen to this. He said, but he answered and said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, that's a pretty wild statement. Think about that for a moment. Here's Jesus early on, and he says, man doesn't live by bread alone, you know, meat and potatoes, but he lives by every word, not half or three quarters or 25%. He said every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, that's quite a statement. Now, I want to step further. If you're here in Matthew, that's in Matthew 4, verse 4. Just flip over here to chapter 5 and listen to this. About verse 17, he said, think not that I have come to destroy the law or the prophets. Now, that's exactly what the guy does when he writes me a letter and he said, now, I heard your broadcast, Mr. Gordon, and you do err because the Old Testament's been abolished and done away with. Now, I'm sure that's what you believe, and I'm sure that's what you heard, and you didn't make a mistake. That pulpit parrot told you that, but that pulpit parrot lied to you. Well, it's either the pulpit parrots are lying or Jesus is lying, because here's a direct contradiction. Listen to this again. He says, think not. This is Jesus, first person speaking. He said, think not that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill. For truly I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, not one jot or tittle. Now a jot is a dotted I, and a tittle is a cross T. He says, till heaven and earth pass, not one dotted I or cross T shall in any wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments, and shall teach men so, he shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Now the pulpit parrots who are telling you that the law has been abolished and done away with, their reward is to be the least in the kingdom. So if you want to be one of the least, then you need to be teaching against this law. If you want to be called great, then you ought to be out teaching even the least commandments. But there's one more little facet that comes into play that people oftentimes raise, and they say, well, what commandments was he talking about? And over here in Matthew 19, verse 16, there was a fellow came up to Jesus and asked him that very same question. He said, which commandments are you talking about, boss? Here's the story. Matthew 19, 16, he said, and behold, one came and said to him, well, good master, what good things shall I do that I may have eternal life? You might ask the same thing. Hey, what do I have to do to go to heaven? What do I have to do to make the rapture? And Jesus responded and said to him, well, why do you call me good? There is none good but one, and that is God. But if you will enter into life, keep the commandments. And the young fellow said to him, which? Good question. Which? And Jesus said, you shall do no murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. And honor your father and mother. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So he listed five of the Ten Commandments. Jesus did not know that the Ten Commandments had been abolished and done away with at his death. In fact, when we go back here to Matthew 4, verse 4, let's think about this for a second. He said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Got that? All right. When he said that, he was alive, wasn't he? He was standing there talking to somebody, and he was alive, vociferating, and he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, when he made that statement, he cited that directly from someplace else in the Bible. Do you know where he cited that from? I'll write this down. He cited it directly from Moses in Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. Not only did he make the statement that man doesn't live by bread alone, but he cited it directly from the Old Testament. You know, the Old Testament, the book that's been abolished and done away with, and nailed to the cross with Jesus, taken out of the way so that you don't have to obey it anymore. Now, not only did he make that citation from the Old Testament, at the time he made that statement, not one word of the New Testament had been written yet. Not a word. Not a word of the New Testament had been penned until after he died. Remember? So the only scripture that was available to refer to was the 39 books of the Old Testament. You could make a better argument that Jesus was not referring to the New Testament than you could to say he was not referring to the Old Testament. Not that I'm making such an allegation, but you could make a better argument for the abolition or abolishing of the new than the old. Now, furthermore, there are 435 of these direct citations contained in the New Testament that come directly from the old. That's 435 direct citations out of the Old Testament. So the writers of the New Testament did not know, like you lucky boys and girls today who have gone to school, that the Old Testament had been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus. All right, now with that out of the way, let's go back to Exodus 20, which is the Old Testament. Here is the law that Jesus referred to in Matthew 19:16. There are 10 points to this law, and it starts off and says this. And God spake all of these words, saying, I am the Eternal, your God, which has brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Very simple, straightforward, one-line sentence. You shall have no other gods before me. And the first thing we do in this country is we create a Congress, a President, and a Supreme Court. We create a new God called the United States of America, replete with laws. And then we worship that new God by obeying the laws of the United States to the exclusion of our Creator, which is a direct violation of the First Commandment. It is an act of treason, and it's punishable by death. It carries with it the death penalty, which is what treason in any country prescribes. Even in the United States, treason against the United States has a prescription for death. So I just wanted to point out to you that we're in breach of contract, which is our problem. And the very first breach of contract is idolatry. And our Creator told us, don't do that. Well, okay, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, boys and girls, but bear in mind now that the national and indeed the worldwide economic meltdown has a cause and effect relationship, which is what we've been discussing here. And this worldwide meltdown of the economy bores in on and relates to the richest nation in the world. And all of the great empires of the past, whether it's the Egyptians, the Babylonians, Assyrians, the Greeks, the Romans, and so on, all of those great civilizations and empires collapsed, disintegrated, disappeared from the world scene. They were great, they were wealthy, they were militarily superior to everybody else, but in the final analysis, they reached their apex, and then they went into decline, and then they collapsed and went into national captivity. And that's where we're headed. And there's a cause and effect relationship for that. Okay, so there's number one. Now, the second commandment says this. It says, you shall have, or you shall not make unto you any graven image, or any likeness of anything that's in the heaven above, or that's in the earth beneath, or that's in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down yourself to them, nor serve them, because I'm the Eternal, and God am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Now, here in the United States, and I think you people in Canada and Australia and Europe and around the world can point to your own idols, we have our national idols. And chief among our national idols is our Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor, followed by the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Monument, and the Capitol Building in Washington, D.C. And we worship and bow down and we pledge allegiance and sing our national anthem to our God, wood and stone, and love it. Now, our Creator comes along and He says, you know, I punish people for that, and I visit the iniquity, that is, the lawless and criminal behavior of people to the third and fourth generations of those that hate me. Now, you personally are probably not responsible for the building of the Statue of Liberty, Washington or Lincoln Monuments, or the Capitol of the United States. You were born into it. But remember that third and fourth generation now. It's 40 years to a generation. We're about 230 years old now. And we are that third and fourth generation of those that hate God and have created and made these idols and worshipped them. And it's going to come back and bite us in the butt. And that's the bottom line. And it's in the process of biting us right now. Third commandment says this. It says, you shall not take the name of the Eternal your God in vain, because the Eternal will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Now, most of us are not doing that. The name Jesus, God, Christ, Lord, these are titles, not names. Now, there are some people that go around making claims that they're using God's name. Jehovah's Witnesses are one. They call him Jehovah's and Jehovah. Yahweh people call him Yahweh, Yahshua, and they have various names. I personally don't know what his name is. I know what some of his names aren't, but I don't know what his name is. Most of us, fortunately for all of us, most of us are not, cannot, and don't know how to take his name in vain, because we don't know what his name is. And that's a benefit. So out of the Ten Commandments, you could just about say the people of the United States of America, and probably most of the Anglo-Saxon world, are not in violation of that one law. Most. Not all, but most aren't in violation of that law. So far, we're in violation of two out of three. Let's take a look at number four here. It says, verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal. In it you shall not do any work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor the stranger that's within your gates. Because in 6 days the Eternal made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and he rested the seventh day, wherefore the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. So he's got one day in the week, Saturday, in case you were wondering what day it is. It begins at Friday sundown, lasts until Saturday sundown, one full day, 24 hours. It's called the Sabbath. Now, just in case you have it in your mind that Sunday's the Sabbath, or Friday, or Wednesday, or it rotates, or something else, that's fine. But that's not your main problem. Your main problem is the violation of the Sabbath, not what day of the week is it. Even if you've got it on the right day of the week, you're probably in violation of the terms and conditions that are set forth for the Sabbath. And that is, you can't buy, sell, trade, work, do your own pleasure, forsake the assembling of yourselves together, or kindle a fire on the Sabbath day. You get seven prohibitions here. Seven indices for keeping the Sabbath day. It would be good if you could get the Sabbath day on the right day of the week. But even if you got it on the wrong day of the week, if you were sincere and believed that it was, in fact, the Sabbath, like old Howard Rand told me one time, he thought Sunday was the Sabbath because the Catholic Church established it and they had the authority to do that. Now, he believed that, I'm sure. I don't, but he did. That being the case, if he was practicing the Sabbath on Sunday, I think it would carry the day for him. I know this, that when I was a kid, we had what we called the Sunday Blue Laws. And everything closed on Sunday. In fact, the world just stopped on Sunday. Starting about Saturday night, the world stopped. And then, on Sunday, everybody went to church. But we didn't work. We didn't buy, we didn't sell, we didn't trade. We couldn't, because all the stores were closed. I can't remember a store being open when I was a child. And I can't remember, well, we didn't go to church, but most people did. Most people went to church on Sunday. Nobody was out working, kindling any fires on the Sabbath day. Nobody was starting their cars or running their trucks and doing any business or anything like that. And America prospered. I mean, we prospered from 1787 to 1950, just like a shot, keeping Sunday. In fact, we even put Sunday into our legal system here and made it the Sabbath, in many places by law. And if they caught you out desecrating the Sabbath, they'd punish you. And that was the civil. That was before the ACLU came along. Well, people didn't know, so they just went out and punished people for breaking the Sabbath. That's because America in those days was a Christian nation. Christian, that is, they followed the Bible, or they thought they were following it. They tried. Then about 1950, the worm turned. Starting about 1950, stores started staying open. They were open on Friday night and Saturday, and then they were open on Sunday. You know, sometimes for limited hours, you know, but they were. Now, you know, hell, everybody's open 7 days a week, 24/7. Nobody pays any attention to Sabbaths, whether it's on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. Nobody cares. Now, the penalty for Sabbath breaking is national captivity. That's what we see historically in Scripture, and I'm pretty sure that that's about what's going to happen to the United States, Australia, and Canada. Now, we didn't get our comeuppance in World War II like the Europeans did. So, you know, stand by and watch and see what happens here. I would suspect that we're going to see Australia, Canada, and the United States going into a foreign national captivity, just like Germany went into captivity and Japan and went into captivity after World War II. Now, number 5 deals with honoring your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the earth, which your Lord, which the Eternal your God gives you. So, here's a statute that comes into play that says, you know, and when I was a kid, we used to do this, you know, when my dad came in the room, I'd stand up. When an elder came into the room, you're a little kid, you're 5, 6 years old, And most kids today, you know, or children today, they're sitting there watching television, you know. They don't even look at you when you come in the room. For most of you parents out there, if you're wondering why your children don't respect you, it's because you've never taught them how. They haven't got a clue. They're watching Captain Midnight or Captain Crunch or something. They don't know what the hell, you know, civility is or honor is. And the reason that they don't know is because you didn't teach them, and the reason you didn't teach them is because you didn't know, and the reason you didn't know is because your parents didn't teach you, and so on back down the line. But I can look back, and I can tell you right now, when an adult came in the room, children stood up. When they were spoken to, they would speak back. No child ever addressed an adult until the adult first addressed him. It was kind of a wild new thing. If my Uncle Buster came in the room, I would stand up. Didn't have to stand at attention, but I had to stand up. And nobody said anything until Uncle Buster said something to me. And then when he said something to me, then it was my turn to respond to him. Now, once the conversation was broached, then I could address him and I could talk to him. But this idea of just walking in the room and saying, "Hey, Buster, here's what I'm looking for," or blah, 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 you know, that was just preposterous poppycock. All right, so with that in mind, keep in mind that this also has a death penalty attached to it, honoring your father and mother. There are 28 penalties in Scripture, and there are 24 capital crimes. Sabbath breaking is a capital crime. Idolatry is a capital crime, and dishonoring your father and mother is a capital crime. Now, the next one over here, you shall not commit adultery, very short and to the point, five words, you shall not commit adultery, another capital felony. Adultery is illegal sexual activity. Here in the United States, we practice these illicit, illegal sexual activities, and then we make sport and make fun of it. You know, like adultery, sodomy, bestiality. If you were watching the late night comedies, you know, like Letterman or Leno, you'd see jokes being made routinely about these capital crimes. People practice that in this country continually. And this is why we're pretty much despised in the Muslim countries, because they don't practice that kind of filth and perversion. And so they look at us and they say, "What a bunch of filthy perverts those Americans are." And they're not too far off. I just wanted to point out, we're not all like that, but, you know, we're developing into that, without a doubt. All right, let's take a look at number six. Excuse me, number... I missed one. Number six here was, "Thou shalt not kill." Four words. Then comes, "Thou shalt not commit adultery," which is number seven. Then, "Thou shalt not steal," which is number eight. "Thou shalt not bear false witness," number nine. And then, "Thou shalt not covet," number ten. I missed one here, so let me back up a little bit where it says, "You shall not kill." This is a guarantee, like our Constitution guarantees. It says you have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of life is protected by "Thou shalt not kill," or "You shall do no murder." Then, "Thou shalt not steal" guarantees or protects your property rights, which has always been construed by our Supreme Court as being your right to own property. Which, remember, that first plank to the Communist Manifesto abolishes. Yep, that's right. The first plank to the Communist Manifesto is the exact opposite of "Thou shalt not steal." And it calls for the abolition of all right to property. Let me read it to you. I think I can flip back here and get it for you. Looking over here at the Communist Manifesto, calls for abolition of property and land and the application of all rent of land to public purposes. All right, number eight, "Thou shalt not steal." Number seven, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." Number six, "Thou shalt not kill." Then we come up here to, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Now, this thing of bearing false witness, we come into court and we raise our hand and we swear an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Well, it's a good thing to come into court and tell the truth, but raising your hand and swearing the oath is a violation of the law. In Matthew 5:33 through 37 and James 5:12, we're instructed, and you can read this, you Christians out there, because it's in the New Testament. It's New Testament. Matthew 5:33 through 37, where the Messiah has instructed us not to forswear ourselves, not to swear this oath. And so what do these guys have us do? What do our government officials have us do? Raise our hands and swear an oath. I'm telling you, boys and girls, if Jesus told you to stand up, you'd sit down. And if he told you to sit down, you'd stand up and run away. In fact, in Luke 6, verse 46, he made an observation and he said, "Why do you people call me Lord, Lord, and do not those things which I say?" Why do you people use my name and call upon me and then do the exact opposite? That's what we call hypocrisy. Or as Mr. Rogers used to say, can you say hypocrisy, boys and girls? Now, the last commandment here says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, and you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox or his ass, nor anything that's your neighbor's. Coveting is an inordinate desire to take away from your neighbor what he's got. That's precisely what we Americans are engaged in. Abraham Lincoln made an observation when he said, you cannot build yourself up by tearing your neighbor down. Instead of trying to take away from your neighbor what he's got, why don't you try to work like he does and emulate him and see if you can't create some of what he's got? And that's what we're trying to teach our students to do here in our business school. We don't want to take away from Bill Gates that which he has. Americans do just exactly that. In fact, our president told us that that's what we're going to do with this new health care legislation. We are going to take away from Bill Gates and all the wealthy people what they have using the police power of the state, and we're going to take it for ourselves. And that's because they've got too much. And so we're going to even it out a little bit. That's what communism is all about. From each according to his ability and to each according to his need. It's the exact opposite to private property. So in the Ten Commandment model, we would not tax Bill Gates any more than 10%. And by taxing Mr. Gates 10%, he will be paying much more in taxes than any of the rest of us. But as a percentage of his total overall income, he won't be paying any more than anybody else. The guy that makes $10,000 a year pays 10%, that's $1,000. The guy that makes $100,000 a year pays 10%, that's $10,000. That's 10 times more than the guy that makes $10,000. And the guy that makes $10 million, he's going to pay $1 million. Everybody pays the same rate. Those that earn more pay more. Now, the communists have a little different program. They have what they call the heavy progressive income tax. That's so that if you make $10,000, you pay nothing. If you make $100,000, you don't pay 10%, you pay 42%, $42,000. And then, if you really want to get busy and go out and work and make $200,000-$500,000, we apply this heavy progressive income tax, and you don't pay twice as much for making twice as much. And you work twice as hard, and you make twice as much, and we take four or five times more tax. Well, okay. God had something to say about that in Malachi. I'll read that to you when we come back. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by simply calling and asking for it. You can order it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Then go to our archives page, and you can download it right off the archives page. georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, we invite you to go to our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, with that out of the way, let me give you a wise old saying. I forgot to give you one yesterday, so I'll give you two today. This one is, in a multitude of counsel, there is safety. In a multitude of fools, there is destruction. In telling the difference is wisdom. Give you that one once more. In a multitude of counsel, there is safety. In a multitude of fools, there is destruction. In telling the difference is wisdom. And the one I'm going to give you today, that was yesterday's, and I forgot to give it to you. Today's is, if you never charge interest, you will never oppress an orphan, a widow, or a stranger thereby. Remember in the scripture, it's against the law to charge interest, and if you never charge interest, you'll never oppress an orphan, a widow, or a stranger, which is against the law to oppress. Now, let's take a look here. If we were going to be the wealthiest nation in the world, we wouldn't be paying an income tax because the income tax is regressive. And if you'll take a look, we started paying the income tax in 1913, and take a look at us today. We're in debt, unable to pay our bills, and we're unable to service our debts. Now, with the $46,000 a year that we have, if you didn't pay your income tax and Social Security, and if you didn't pay your education bill, if you took those three taxes, that is the $500 billion a year that you're spending on education, and you cut that in half, privatize it, it would give you $250 billion a year to pay your debts with. If you stop paying your income tax, and you stopped paying your Social Security, and you practice strict liability, and you limited your government, and you tithed, and you paid your 10% tithe, which we're prescribed to do here in Malachi chapter 3, we could service our debt, and we could pay it off. Now, the powers that be, the insurance companies, the banks, and the politicians, are not going to let you do that. They're not going to encourage you to do that, and they're going to get in your way, and they're going to stop you by any means possible. So if you want to get out from under this debt and you want to be prosperous, then you're going to have to take action yourself. And the way you take action is you stop practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and you start practicing the 10 commandments. So here at the law school, we suggest that out of 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, that you just start taking on one a week. One a week. They divide into 133 subject matters. If you could master one a week in 133 weeks, you could be practicing the whole Mosaic Law. 133 weeks. Takes you about, you know, 2.5 years. In 36 months, you could shift over from the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto to the 10 Commandments. Now, here's the other side of the coin. It takes about 36 months from the time you start at zero COD to amass, save, and store about 100 ounces of gold, or about 100,000 Federal Reserve note dollars. We don't deal in dollars, we deal in ounces of gold, but about 100 ounces of gold in 36 months, which is, you know, right in the neighborhood of 3 ounces a month. Now listen to what your Creator told you. He said, in verse 8, he says, "Will a man rob God?" That's a good question. Will you rob God? And he says, "Yet you have robbed me." Now you say, "Well, wherein have we robbed you, God?" And he answers, "In tithes and offerings." Tithes and offerings. Now a tithe is 10% of your net. It's not 10% of your gross, it's 10% of your net. And an offering is a freewill offering that you make on one of 7 annual holy days. So you have a Sabbath every Saturday, and you have 7 annual holy days, and they are the first and last days of unleavened bread, the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, and Last Great Day. 7 annual holy days. I know you've never heard of those before. You've been practicing Christmas, Easter, New Year's, Valentine's Day, the 4th of July, Labor Day, and Martin Luther King Day. But those are pagan holidays. And God never told you to practice those days. In fact, he told you, don't do that. But of course, we're all smarter than God, and so we've got our own holy days and holidays. And that's why we're not the richest nation in the world any longer. And we're getting poorer every day. And the ultimate end of this is national captivity. But he goes on, and he tells us a little bit more. In verse 9, he says, "You are cursed with a curse because you've robbed me, even this whole nation." So he isn't just singling you out as an individual. He's saying, hey, you got 300 million of you suckers out there, and you're all in the process of robbing me. And because you've robbed me, you're cursed with a curse. Now take a look. Pay attention now. Are you watching Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, and the Congress of the United States rape you, rob you, and pillage you? Did you think that was happening accidentally or by caprice? Well, now you got the answer. Your God himself says, I'm going to curse you with a curse. And it's not accidental. Now he instructs you in verse 10. He says, "You bring all of the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house." And prove me now herewith, says the Eternal of Hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruit of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, says the Eternal, and all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, says the Eternal of Hosts. Now, the reason that we're being cursed is because we won't tithe. It's not the only reason, but it is the big reason. And if you want to turn around your financial circumstances, then you have to tithe. And if you won't tithe, then you can't turn it around. It's just that simple. Now, I'm not here to tell you to send your tithes and offerings to, because they don't give a rat's rectum whether you do or not, because they don't care whether or not you're successful or a failure. I'm a reporter. My job in life is to report facts. And I just reported one right there. Financial success, personally and individually, financial success nationally requires tithing. And as long as you pay this income tax, as long as you immerse yourself in Social Security and limited liability, you're going to impoverish yourselves. Now, from 1933 until today, you went from being the wealthiest, most successful, powerful, prosperous nation in the world to the single most indebted country in the history of the world. You're flat-ass broke and you're poverty-stricken. And your homes are being taken away from you, and you're losing your employment. Now, I don't know what can get worse for you. Now, remember, he told you in Leviticus 26, he says, now, this is just the beginning of it. You haven't seen the punishment yet. I'm just leaning on you. And if you won't be reformed by this, then I'm going to punish you 7 times more for your sins. Sin is the transgression of the law. Sin is crime. Sin is breach of contract. Now, the problem that we have here in America, and I suspect that you Australians and Canadians are right here with us, is that you have breached your agreement, breached the contract. And as soon as you come back and perform on the contract, you can get back on track again. You know, it works pretty simply. You haven't made some payments on your house, and the bank sends you a letter and says, hey, we're gonna foreclose on your house and take it away from you. And so you wake up one day and you say, you know, maybe I ought to cure this breach. So you go down to the bank and you say, now listen, I'm 3 months behind, but let me entreat you. Let me make one payment. Here's one payment. Now I'm 2 payments behind. Next month, I'm going to make my payment, and I'm going to do half of another payment. And then the month after that, I'm going to make a payment, and then I'll make another half a payment. Then I'll be 1 payment behind. And then the month after that, I'm going to make a payment with a half a payment. And then the month after that, I'm going to make a payment with a half a payment. And then I'll be up to date. Would you go along with me on this new structure? And I'll just bet you, like as not, the bank would say, yeah, well, we'll go along with that. And then if you carry through with that, you've cured that breach of contract. Now your credit's pretty good again. I did that one time. I owed a bunch of guys a bunch of money, 40 grand as I recall, 22 of them. And I went out, and I went to each one of them. I went down to Don Watkins, and I said, hey, Don, I'm upside down. I'm sorry as hell. What kind of a deal can we make? And I worked out a deal with him. I went around to all my creditors, and I said, boys, this is where it's at. And they all agreed with me. They said, George, listen, we want to help you in any way we can. So I had to draw up a pretty austere budget there. You know, I had to give up lattes at Starbucks and vacations at Disneyland. And for about 3 years, I had to put my nose to the grindstone, and I hustled. And I paid all those boys off. Paid them all off. Boy, were they happy. I not only paid them off, but I bought a lot of stuff with them, or from them in the meantime. When it was all said and done, I could go back and get credit from any of those boys at any time I wanted. And they knew that I meant what I said and said what I meant, and they knew that when I said I'm going to pay them back, they could count on me. And I paid them. Now that's a very important aspect of character. In fact, in Numbers chapter 30, what proceeds out of your mouth can't return again. That's what a lawmaker, that's what a sovereign is all about. It's a guy that makes law, makes a deal, and he sticks with it. Now, we made a deal with our Creator back at Mount Sinai, and we haven't stuck by our deal. Our word hasn't been very good. And so God is getting upset now, and he said, "Now listen, guys, let me remind you of our agreement." And so far, he's just leaning on us. I mean, things aren't good, but they're not catastrophic yet. But we're headed toward catastrophe. We're headed that way. Now, I don't know how much time we've got to cure this, but as individuals, I'm not sitting here saying, can we save America, because I don't believe that's going to happen. But you can save yourself, you can save your own family, you know, you can bail your chestnuts out of the fire. You don't have to follow a multitude to do evil. So here at the law school, we concentrate on individuals and families. What can you do? What do you need to do to solve this breach of contract for you and your family, and to bail your chestnuts out of the fire, which is pretty important, and I'll show you why. Over in Revelation chapter 3, there's some people being spoken of here, chapter 2 and chapter 3, and there's a little group of people here called Philadelphians. Maybe you've heard that name, Philadelphia. We have a city here in the United States named Philadelphia. And here's what the story is on the Philadelphians. He says, chapter 3, verse 7, "And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write these things, says he that's holy, he that's true, he that has the key of David, he that opens and no man shuts and no man opens. I know your works, and behold, I've set before you an open door, no man can shut it, because you have a little strength, and you have kept my word, and you have not denied my name. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before your feet and to know that I've loved you." So he's talking to a group of people. People who are alive today. Says, "Hey, I know your works. You're pretty good guys. Because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation which shall come upon all the world, try them that dwell upon the earth." This word patience means commandments of God, and it's translated in Revelation 14:12. He says, "Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which you have, that no man takes your crown. He that overcomes will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. And I'll write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, which is the new Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I'll write upon him a new name. He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says unto the churches." Now that's a pretty good benefit for those people who adhere to the terms and conditions of the contract. Those who practice the commandments of God, those who practice the Sabbath, and thou shalt not steal, and private property, and thou shalt not kill, those people are going to be protected and spared, taken care of. If you were a fundamental evangelical Christian, you'd say, well, those are the people that are going to be raptured off. Well, okay. I wish you the best of luck there for you rapturists, but in any event, if you would obey God and keep His commandments, He'll take care of you. Now, if you don't, there's a seventh group over here. They're called the Laodiceans. Now, listen to this little group over here. And unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write these things, says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, and the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you are neither hot nor cold. I wish that you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm, and neither cold nor hot, I will spew you out of my mouth. Because you say, I am rich and increased with goods, and I have need of nothing, and you know not that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. I counseled you to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that you may be rich, and white raiment, that you may be clothed, and that the shame of your nakedness do not appear, and anoint your eyes with eye salve, that you may see. Now as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hears my voice and opens the door, I'll come into him, and I'll sup with him, and he with me. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says unto the churches. Now today in America, you know, we're pretty fat and sassy. We've got our bank accounts and Social Security, and now we've got national health insurance. And we're eating real good off of you Chinese and Japanese. We're living just real good with your big screen TVs and you people working over there around the world furnishing us with our tennis shoes and all of our clothes and goods and food. But I suspect that you people around the world are going to wake up one of these days and recognize that the emperor over here is naked, and that this new suit of clothes that we're bragging about is nakedness and foolishness. So I just thought I would make my report. And there it is. That's my report. The richest nation in the world is naked and blind. And then our Creator tells us, wake up and smell the coffee here, children, and let's see if we can't straighten you out and get you back making your payments and performing on your contract. Now, to summarize, we've got a contract negotiated by Moses at Mount Sinai. You and I, boys and girls, are in breach of contract, and the contractor is saying, pay up. Get your payments current. And then I'll continue the work, and when we get through, we're all going to be happy, and we're all going to have a big party and bust open a bottle of champagne, and we'll have dance a jig and have a good time. But if you don't, there's going to be foreclosure. There's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and there's going to be sadness on everybody's part. And that's what this great economic meltdown around the world is all about. It's a wake-up call. It isn't the catastrophe yet, but I don't think we're too far away from it. And we're probably not going to save Australia, Canada, the United States, or Western Europe, but we can sure save ourselves. Just one person and one family at a time. Well, all right, boys and girls, I'm about out of time again, so let me give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log, schedule, and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.